Who are you now? Identity is a tough one. People who don't see why we can't just quickly move on from or get over the troubling bits of our culture don't understand that it's not just about changing our stance on whether we think some beliefs are true or not. It's literally about changing who we think we are, about changing who we really are, becoming someone a bit different, very much against the strongly worded opinions of people who were living this way since long before we were born. Darlene says,
"When I left Brethren, I didn't know who I was or how I was supposed to act. I was so used to being a carbon copy of the environment we grew up in."
And if you become a new person, you will certainly have to know who you are now. Because if you move beyond a culture or have problems with parts of it, you will almost certainly be told by that culture exactly who it feels you are. Often, a trouble-causing, malicious figure up to no good, clearly having no common sense, virtue, discernment, or relationship with God. My dad had sat, more or less silently, through one church division, tacitly supporting that 60% of the TWs worldwide be kicked out for not submitting to a couple of the most conservative guys in Ottawa. But when, just over 10 years later, he was being asked to sit silently again while the same guys did it all over again, he told them he did not agree. He was told, "Our way or the highway," that's a direct quote, and he got up and walked out. He drove home and never went back to the place he'd asked to worship in his teens in the 1950s. Then, each Sunday morning, he had to stay home. It was that, or go in and ask for an audience with them, to tell them they were right to support all of the punitive kicking out of people who had a problem with all of the kickings out. So he stayed home, got up at meeting time, and just sat in his chair at home, shuffling through some notes elderly ladies had taken of what had gone on during past Sundays when he'd attended and participated, silently turning to each of the hymns in the order in which he and others had given them out, silently turning to each Bible portion in the order in which he and others had read them to everyone, fantasizing like he was still able to go to meeting. So, the Our Way or the Highway power folk announced that he and Mom were out worldwide, and not just in a gay way. And one week in the summer, I'd lost track of it being Sunday mid-morning, and I dropped by. I saw how lost my father was. He didn't know who he was if his week didn't start off with him going out to meeting. He didn't know how to see himself as a Christian without going out to meeting and speaking up and taking part in all of that. The core had been torn out of his week. His relationship with God and his relationship with a group of other Christians were the same thing to him. This meant that his relationship with God was now in the past. They told him they could cut him off from taking communion at the Lord's table and had then announced doing just that, as punishment for his refusal to submit to the God-given authority of those guys to scatter the flock. And so, as far as he was concerned, this was all a very real thing. So eventually, he fell in with some other dissenters to the kickings out, and they recreated the same basic meeting structure themselves in Gilbert's living room. These men weren't so much against kicking people out, so much as not fans of the men who'd done it. So they started doing Lord's Day morning meeting themselves, claiming to be the real original Ghostbusters. They now viewed the group that had kicked them out for not supporting the kickings out as the one we had to walk away from, but which certainly did not kick us out. Vice versa, in fact. Soon enough, they had kicked out a pair of the very few who were attending their new/original group, and then, eventually, letters came demanding their support in kicking out a bunch of other people, for very dubious reasons. Henry Short had written a pamphlet which listed things about TW teachings on the one right place that weren't found in the actual Bible. Nothing more than a "the Bible doesn't have the following things in it" thing. For instance, the Bible speaks of putting a wicked person out from among yourselves, not away from the Lord's table. And that was it. Henry Short was kicked out by people who'd left their original Brethren group in order to object to it kicking David Gray out for stupid reasons. Of course, a new group formed around Henry Short. I wonder who they'll kick out first. But the locals were supporting the kicking out of Henry Short. and my father felt he had to walk away again. But again, he didn't know who he was if he wasn't a meeting guy. None of them did. So then he started doing Lord's Day morning, which is his wife, his sister, and her friend, in his sister's kitchen. The friend was eventually seduced away, back to the greater numbers of the original Our Way or the Highway group. So there are just the three of them. The church culture, you see, told us who we were and how we were doing. Our attendance and general conformity were key factors in scoring well. Were we doing okay in life? So long as we were showing up at meeting and weren't in trouble for anything there, then we officially were doing okay in life. Our lives were going according to plan. Some would even say we were clearly following the Lord's will for our lives and that we were an encouragement to everyone. So encouraging to see people going on well for the Lord. One solution to disagreeing with who your church culture announces that you are is to form a new church. New church, new church culture. You can make it say whatever you need it to about anyone. If you start it, you run it. Simple. You can exclude right back. Or better yet, you can invite them, knowing they'll refuse to come, and you can feel smug about beating them about being open. I have not felt free to use this tactic. I don't believe in it. But one thing I did have to do was learn who I was and not simply believe my culture when it said I was wicked. I certainly didn't decide, oh well, might as well party, I'm wicked and all. That would have been stupid. Don't become the predicted reprobate. If you move beyond or rely less on your culture to tell you who and what you are, you are going to need to know who you are and how you're doing all by yourself. The lie we are told is that if you want to drink the occasional beer and hang around in sports bars and the like, then you are, of course, going to have to become a bad person who is wandering far from the Lord rather than an obedient, Bible-believing meeting person. That living in the fullness of freedom from the obligation to keep the law will result in us living lawlessly. This is like saying that not including a moral at the end of every story one tells little children will invariably result in us telling them immoral stories. Of course, that's not how it actually works. The one isn't paid for with the other like that. The two aren't connected in that direct way. But these things tend to be quite self-fulfilling. If you want to go drink a few beers in a bar, and you've always been taught that the price one pays for this is addiction to alcohol, chances are good that you are going to be charged that price and become addicted to alcohol. You won't even fight it terribly hard, as you will have been taught to expect it. And it's what you chose. More than one Brethren person I went to meeting with has done jail time for alcohol-related offenses and had their family lives drowned under a dank, heaving sea of alcoholism. If you want to get the internet for your house, and you've been taught that the price you pay for that is porn addiction, then you are quite possibly going to decide eventually that you are addicted to pornography. Brethren people I went to church with have done jail time for having kiddie porn in their computers. And meeting people I went to youth group with are doing life for murder. Others have killed themselves. Tell me again how this stuff isn't serious, and I should forget about it and move on. The world, we were always told, isn't safe. Well, I agree. It's not. And so we were told to stay out of it. Well, it's a whole lot worse if you've run off into it eventually with no real experience of it, no skills for dealing with it, and a culture-supported belief that you have to toss the baby out with the bathwater in order to have a life. If you just accept all those wild predictions of lawless depravity and disaster, you kind of make yourself vulnerable to them. And if you do things that you yourself actually believe are stupid or bad, you do damage to yourself, no matter what anyone else thinks or says about any of it. It's bad. Many of my church acquaintances seem to have become exactly what they were told they'd become if they didn't keep their lives tightly locked under church control. And I think there was no reason for that. I think in the church culture, they didn't have Christ in their weekly lives, no matter how locked into church culture and rules and routines and activities they were. And when they left it, they still didn't have him. They just didn't have meeting anymore. I think they were just as lost once they got out as when they were in. It might seem harsh to use the word lost about them and say they didn't have Christ. I'm not really talking about afterlife here. I'm talking about if their lives over the decades seem to have gone in the direction of growth and love and light. But who am I, right? I'm in no position to judge, nor is that the reason I'm writing this book. But by the time people are in jail and mental institutions or are dead, with ruined family lives having hurt everyone around them, I start to feel like maybe I'm just pointing out the obvious. These people are lost as to finding their way in their lives. And it's tough to deal with people like that. Punching them in the face won't make them stop drinking. I have attempted this strategy. Loving them may not be enough to help either. More often, I have attempted this. It can really hurt, and it's never really worked either. Unlike the Book of Mormon, the Bible was not written in North America. It wasn't even written in Europe. It was written far east of here. The thinking in it is far more Eastern than we're ready for often. As I understand it, part of the meaning for the yin-yang symbol is that the ideal place to stand in life is with one foot in the changeable, chaotic, uncontrollable, unknown yin, and the other in the static, structured, controlled, known yang. That wisdom and success come from a balance, a combination of opposites. Good and evil, God and Satan, are not equal opposites, of course. But I think there's a lot of that in the Bible. Balance. An example is that we are told to be subtle as serpents, but harmless as doves. Another is that we are told to be angry, but sin not. Yet another is that we are to walk free according to grace, but not use the liberty or the grace as an occasion to sin. The whole love versus light, brethren, overemphasis upon closeness and limits has already been thoroughly beaten to death in this chunky volume. So, if you leave behind a repressive, overly yang culture, you have to find your own balance. If you were raised with both feet on the one side, there is no wisdom in leaping over to put both feet on the other side. So, if you were raised yang, you can't just run amok going as far to the yin side as you can. You need to find a centered, balanced, workable way to live. One foot in opportunity, discovery, inspiration, intuition, and change, and the other foot in sense, order, pattern, and routine. You need to create and define both and keep some sort of balance going. If your parents and church had no balance, then you need balance more than you need to upset them or mirror yin to their yang. You don't want to be a slave to bitter shame and other people's ideas about who you are. And you don't want to be a lawless reprobate who can't make his or her weak work. You want to be a whole person. And God is both found in and leads one to wholeness and balance. On the one hand, he inspires and confounds, mystifies and changes things. On the other, he is also about order, knowledge, wisdom, and what makes sense. Either one can be overemphasized to the detriment of your life. What you'll need. So maybe, like me, you've also been told that if your attendance at church drops off, you are soon going to become a depraved, addicted, selfish piece of crap. Let me be very clear. You don't have to become these bad things just because you're not into the church thing anymore. In fact, it's up to you not to. Now, just as it was then. Relationship with God helps you choose wise and healthy paths far more than adherence to church lifestyle ever could. So pursue that. Accountability to good people around you who notice when you're screwing up is extremely valuable. But if every one of those people is from the same church culture, there starts to be a collective control thing that can get very one-sided and very out of control. You need people, all right, but different kinds of people who aren't part of the same thing and who don't share a group agenda, people who actually know you when you're not at church, people who care and are good people to know. You need to be able to listen to people like that, but also able to say fuck it if they aren't making sense. Sometimes no one gets it but you and God. You may have been trained to expect that, if you leave your culture, you have to give up everything, all family and church and Christian connections. Of course, you do not. In fact, you may suddenly be free to make human connections and have amazing experiences you never would have otherwise had. But keep your act together. Don't pursue freedom by tossing sense out the window. Develop wisdom of your own with God. As I said, I had that overactive conscience keeping me from connecting with people outside my meeting and experiencing the world. It was like a smoke detector that goes off every single time the cat farts. Useless. I had to let it get less inflamed. I had to go gentle on it, without taking it too seriously, but without searing the crap out of it until it was a melted puddle of plastic that didn't work at all. This took a lot of time. I had a conscience that was ringing a four-alarm fire over my renting Footloose right where worldly people could see me paying my buck for it in a store with big glass windows people could see into from the street. My conscience could just barely handle renting Footloose. It certainly didn't allow me to dance. It needed to get toned down. I had allergies to normal activities, due to having only recently emerged from that bubble I was raised in. Jake, reminiscing back to his early teen years from the seasoned vantage point of his late teen years, says,
I partied and developed a weed habit, got addicted to pornography and swore a lot, watched bad movies, listened to bad music, and all the rest. But when I broke some of these rules, I came to see a side of things that was never given room by the religious fear. I began to see people who only smoke weed together, who still love each other, and who weren't Satanists who were out to kill everyone. They were still my close friends and never meant to harm anyone. I began to see people who got drunk on the weekends because they enjoyed spending time with friends, not because they were Satanist alcoholics. That stuff is never spoken of in church, and it grew a lot of questions within me. What was so crazy was the pressure that I was never supposed to question any of it.
Jake is talking about the need for balance in terms of attitude. The unbalanced attitude he'd been raised with, only bad, hateful, nasty, probably Satan-worshipping people would ever smoke weed and get drunk, meant that when he kind of wanted to try those things, his expectations were according to how he'd been trained. And he didn't decide whether or not to try these things with balanced thinking. He was pretty much willing to be a bad, hateful, nasty person to try them. He thought maybe that was the price for trying getting drunk. Because the only thing that had been keeping him from trying them before that was kind of a lie. It certainly was an unbalanced, overstated, ignorant view anyway. So it stopped working when he met people who showed up the lack of balanced honesty in it. As a child, Jake had remained fastened, way over to the side of disdainful, fearful piety, and when that let go in his early teens, he swung just as far over the other way. Every parent I've spoken to who homeschools her kids claims to be raising said tykes with more of a balanced worldview than they would ever have gained from the mix of the 20 or so teachers who would touch their development by the time they graduated high school. This makes me wonder how balanced she and her views really are, because she's putting all of her eggs or children in that one basket, trusting she won't drop it. This happens so often when parents overstate and speak without wisdom and knowledge about the things they want to keep their kids out of. Balance means being able to have a foot on each side of an issue. It means not needing to lie or play us versus them games. It means being able to tell the truth. It means not cheating to try to win in the game of good, not doing evil that good may come. As for me, I didn't want to become an alcoholic or get addicted to pornography or anything to find freedom when I was in my 20s. So I took it easy. I waited for my inflamed, angry conscience to shrink slightly while listening to it with common sense and seeing what I really believed, as opposed to what I'd merely been brainwashed to superstitiously fear. I'd been taught that if I had a drink, I would almost certainly become an alcoholic. Well, when I eventually had a drink, I didn't see the appeal in getting drunk. And at 21, it seemed far too late to get drunk in the manner of a typical Canadian 12-year-old. All the puking, for one thing, genitals drawn on my face with Sharpie, for another. So I just didn't. And then I was told at my church that, all right, maybe I wasn't an alcoholic, but I had to be sensitive to others and not drink, as it might lead some other theoretical person into becoming an alcoholic. How, then, was freedom of any kind possible? All this didn't seem like a sensible way to try to connect to the young. I know a lot of parents of teens who try to keep the devil out of their teen by being very controlling, by emphasizing rules. I've seen those kids grow up and kind of move on from the church Christianity of their parents into lives of contented atheism. Often, they respect their parents and the commitment required to live a life of rules. Often, they feel the rules are good, but things they themselves have no intention of keeping. I think the thing that was missing with all of those people was their parents were working more to keep the devil out of the child with rules than to get any Christ into them with love they could recognize as love. Christian love wasn't something the kids felt strongly enough for it to tempt them to stay. They grew up and experienced church culture, the Bible, and Christianity as being nothing other than a bunch of limits and rules. and they live secular lives now, without feeling like they're missing any love they used to enjoy among us. They felt the rules, but not love. They didn't know Christ, but only what Dallas Willard calls consumer Christianity. They're listening to different tunes now, Sunday mornings. I saw a documentary about how Amish kids, under such strict lifestyle and cultural constraints from birth, get a year in their teens to bust out. They often save up all their farming money for years, then buy a sports car, bling, Oakleys, techno CDs, and Eurotrash clothes, and spend that year drunk driving at high speeds to movie theaters and raves on Molly. Often, once they've done this for the year, they sell the car and return to Amish life for swearing soccer shirts and neck chains forever, having seen how evil they are. How not them that whole lifestyle ultimately was in the long term. After all, they want to have Amish kids of their own and raise them right and teach them how excessive and trashy and unhealthy life outside their culture clearly is. You don't need to bust out in such a dramatic way. Probably shouldn't. If you're finding your way to God and you're building a life that makes sense, you will need baby steps, not melodramatic hedonism. So take it easy. Do it with Him. If you try to flee God while you're fleeing your indoctrination, you just might repeatedly wind up face down, covered in puke somewhere as predicted, no further away from any of what you're fleeing, because you carry that stuff imprinted on your heart. It takes a while to grow beyond it. There may be times when you will look at yourself and wonder in confusion and despair who you are now. In those times, remind yourself of who you are by demonstrating virtue. Not piety, virtue. Help someone. Do something you're good at. Make something better. If you are a person who is kind, who sings, who writes poetry, who paints, who helps little kids learn to skate or whatever, do a bit of that to remind yourself that there is virtue in you planted there by God Himself. And now it's time for it to grow tall and strong.